Lecture 9. I prove it works. I prove it works. Little and big, I prove it works. All of us have had lots of experiences in our life where we have seen the principle functioning. We have seen the law working. And we appreciate the fact that the law works. However, we sometimes think it doesn't work. And we give more of our power and credence to the idea that it doesn't work than to the idea that it does work. And so therefore, we have our little blessing book that we write in, and we write in all those little blessings that we have sought. And we write in there and say that it doesn't work. We write in there and say, I would like to enjoy prosperity. And all we know is poverty. I would like to enjoy wholeness. And all we enjoy is illness, and so on. Now, why is that happening that way? Why does that take place like that? Why is it that the very thing that we say we want, the thing that is most important to us, doesn't seem to come through? Well, very simple. Very simple. We are using the wrong language. Should use French. We're using the wrong language. The language that we use should be the positive language, the effective now language, not the to-be, to-come, will language, because that is the language of tomorrow. In fact, there's a school. In every way, in every day, in every way, we're getting better and better and better. And that's Emile Cotet's beautiful statement, which came down through the early part of this century, last century, that is, in which people wanted to be successful, wanted to be helpful. Various writers, Think and Grow Rich, and How to Have the Power of Your Mind Under Your Control, and things like that. They all said the same thing. And they said, set deadlines for what you want. Set deadlines for what you want. Set deadlines. And it's a very, psychologically, seemingly sound thing to do. You said that by next Thursday, I want to be out of debt. By next Thursday, by next Friday, by next Monday, I want to enjoy perfect health. My baby is perfect, and the doctors will do everything that's necessary to make my baby perfect. My baby will be perfect. By the end of the month, my baby will be up and running around. Well, what month? Well, okay, we'll say the end of January. That's coming up in a couple of days. So, that's the month my baby's going to be running around. When we say that, we are saying, not now. Not now. Our scientific evidence is coming more and more to the fore these days, saying that all time is here and all space is here. All time is now and all space is here. It's saying this to us again and again and again. And we still stay back with the old Emile Cotet's statement, in every way and every day I'm getting better and better and better. Now! Can you speak your word and claim now? When you make a statement and you're at your baby's bedside and your baby is dying of something or other, and you say, oh, be whole and perfect, be whole and perfect, come on, you can do it, heal. Now, everything's okay. The doctor's doing all the good stuff. You know, panic, panic, panic. Let's just look at how Jesus might have gone in there. Jesus went into the bedside of many people, adults and children, and he laid his hand on the child, perhaps, or perhaps he didn't. Laying the hand is totally sort of a homey point of view, but not necessary. And he'd say, you're whole and perfect. Or he'd say, what do you want from me? I see nothing wrong with this child. But the child's got the measles. Can't you see that? The whooping cough, the whatever, you know. Pneumonia. Jesus said, yes. Is that a problem? What a fool you are. Don't you realize that we don't want our child to have pneumonia? We don't want our child to have the measles? Well, that would seem reasonable. But that's not what you said. You said, our child has, let's keep it with one thing, our child has pneumonia. And so long as you proclaim that your child has pneumonia, your child will have pneumonia. And if in your mind pneumonia takes so many days, weeks, or months for it to work its way out of the system, or work its way into the system and kill them, then that's what will take place. Now, are you thinking it's going to work its way out of the system? Then in so many months it'll be done? Well, that's one thing. Are you thinking it's going to work its way into the system and kill them? That's another thing. Or do you say, my child is whole and perfect right now. Every organ, action, function of my child is whole and perfect right now. With confidence, with enthusiasm, with joy. Right now, my child is whole and perfect. Then what happens? The child experiences wholeness and perfection. But I can't see it. I cannot see. He's whole and perfect right now, and I'm looking right at him, and he's got a problem. Well, what does a doctor do? You go into a doctor's office, and the doctor says, you got a problem here. It's going to take us 3 days to clear this up, but you take these pills, you go home, and you call me in the morning and let me know how you're coming along. And so you take the pills, but because the doctor says it's going to take 3 days, it's going to take 3 days. Some people do not cooperate with their doctor. Some people will not cooperate with their doctor, and I would say it's a good majority. You know what they do? The doctor says, now, you take this medicine until it's all gone. And when it's all gone, then you're okay. You're whole and perfect. And so 2 days after you're taking the medicine that you're supposed to take for a couple of weeks, you feel fantastic. Everything is back to normal again. And so you stop taking the medicine. And then you go back to the doctor's office at the appointed time, and he says, did you take the medicine all the time? Nope. Well, I'm sorry, I cannot guarantee that we cleaned it all out, because you didn't take the medicine for the full length of time, so therefore that disease could very readily come back. We didn't clean it out. We didn't clean it out. Well, that's a wonderful doctor, but how do you know that it takes exactly that many days to clean out? How do you know how stringent that was in me at that time? How do you know how everybody is exactly the same? Oh, I treat everyone differently. Oh, to hell you do. A cold takes how long to cure? Huh? Anybody?
A week or 7 days.
A week or 7 days. Well, that depends on what you call your week, yeah. Okay, so it takes a week. That's for everybody. But there are some people whose cold hangs on and hangs on and hangs on. You know the people who don't cooperate with rules. And then there are other people, they are going to get married, or they're going to have a wonderful trip, or they're going to do something especially wonderful, and they can't afford to have a cold. So they have a cold for 1 day, and they said, that's enough. And they ignore the cold. They will not allow the cold to take over for them. They are the masters. And they go on their trip, not one little bit bothered by the cold. And they come back, and their friends say, oh, I thought you had a cold. Oh, yes, how about that? I forgot about that. So now the 7 days starts from the day that he's back. But you see, these are games we play. These are games we play. You wonder why you're not demonstrating your treatment. You wonder why you're not demonstrating what you have put into motion for yourself. The reason is that you're not consistent. 1 minute you say, I'm whole and perfect. The next minute you say, I got a cold. And you know what else we do? We say, this is my cold. My personal cold. I own this cold. It came just for me. Boy, oh boy, oh boy. Who wants that? This is my broken leg. This is my ulcer. This is my migraine headache. Wow, I really raise good migraine headaches. You know, the doctor said he's never seen anyone who has migraine headaches worse than mine. He says, I really have the greatest migraine headaches in the world. Well, bully, bully, you know. Why do we feel so proud about that? Why do we feel so proud about something that is not beneficial to us? It's a silly thing to do, but we do it. Okay. How do we prove that it works? You start making out a book for yourself. Okay? You make out a book for yourself. A book of your wonderful blessings. A blessing book. Okay? And then we'll get one for your mom too. So, and we'll get one for your sister too. And you all have your blessing books, don't you? Anyone who doesn't have a blessing book, raise your hand. Who does not have a blessing book? So all of you have a blessing book. Now, what are you to write in your blessing book? You're to write in your blessing book the wonderful things that have happened to you, the wonderful things that are taking place in your life, the miracles that are going on in your world that you wouldn't remember otherwise. A lot of them are little ones. And then you could read it over later and you'd be surprised. But also write in your blessing book the truth about yourself. You could have a page, every so many pages, and it could be called The Truth About Myself. I am independently wealthy, or I am wealthy. I live in my eternally perfect ideal spirit, mind, and body, or I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. I am a happy person. All positive, first person, present tense, positive. My body is whole and perfect. You've been experiencing something that you didn't like. So you're starting to say, my body's whole and perfect. You are telling your body that you got a new attitude about it now. You have a new attitude you want your body to express. And what's that new attitude? Wholeness. So you say to your body, I'm whole and perfect. And the body says, whatever you want. You are just so changeable. 1 minute you say you're sick. The next minute you say you're home perfect. 1 minute sick. The next minute you're home perfect. Make up your mind. You know, you can have whatever you want. I'm on a yo-yo, giving it back and forth, giving you sickness, giving you wholeness, giving you sickness. 1 minute you feel just great, and the next minute you feel like you're dead. You know, make up your mind. So you make up your mind, and you say, I'm whole and perfect. You say, my complexion is gorgeous. My hair is radiant. I don't even use any shampoo. I just go under the water and shake it. And all of my natural oils come out, and my hair is radiant and glorious. Yeah? My figure is grand and glorious. I can wear any clothes, and I look great. I am a loving person surrounded by loving people. I walk down the street and everyone looks at me and says, I know you. Well, what they know about you is that you are a beautiful person, and they do know a beautiful person in their life now and then, you know? I know you. There's something familiar about you. Not too familiar, but familiar. You have that loving attitude that I saw. Who was it I saw? Oh, yeah, my wife, you know. Oh, my husband, you know. Or my friend. You have that unconditionally loving, non-judgmental attitude. I don't see that too often, but it's sure nice to see it. And you see, you write that in your book. You think those in your thoughts, and you demonstrate those in your life, in the here and in the now. Now, I prove it works, little or big. I prove it works. Am I proving anything to you right now? Not really. I'm telling you the technique. You're the one who proves it to you. You're the one that proves it to yourself how it works. Now, this is a place where beautiful people dwell. People who are not only getting better and better every day, but people who are the finest. On this campus live only the outstanding beings of this universe, the most beautiful, the most fulfilled, the most glorious people in the world. People on campus want nothing, need nothing, but enjoy everything. They go where they want to go and do what they want to do and experience what they want to experience, and everything is in divine order. You say, well, how do they get any work done? How do they do it? That's a choice of theirs too. They want to do these things. They want to do them because it's fun, because it's a joy. They give their full attention to it. Well, here, don't you want to go down to the beach and go swimming? Oh, I'd rather rake the roadway here, because I feel so fulfilled when I rake the roadway. I just do it like an artist. I take all the stones and put them off to the side, and I make the dirt compacted down, make everything just so beautiful. I don't have any rough edges along the edge of the roads where the tractor had left its pile of dirt. I rake it over into a lovely crown, a lovely smooth area. I'm proud of it. I only do maybe 10 feet a day. Oh, and maybe 5 feet. But every foot that I do is done with love. Every foot that I do is done with my caring. But what about when it rains? You know, then you got to start all over again. Isn't that wonderful? I get to do it again. I get to do it again and again. And should you ever want to consider yourself as a master, just should you ever want to consider that, you can say, the rain doesn't fall on my road. Or, the rain falls everywhere except on my road. And the drainage is on the outside of the berm, not the inside of the berm. And so my roads are perfect. But we put the berm up so it wouldn't go down into those other roads. Well, we'll put another berm up there. It'll be called a ditch. It'll be called a drainage path. And when it rains, as seldom as it does, the rain will go right down that little drainage path. Perfectly beautiful. And then when you drive on those other roads, you go ba-boom, ba-boom. You go over two little berms. And why not? Why not? This is no speedway around here. There's no great rush for people to go places and do things. But you see, there's always a way. There's always a way. But one of the wonderful things about the way is humility. When you can learn humility. Now, we talked about Brother Lawrence doing everything he did as a brother in the monastery for Jesus, and how he cleaned the kitchen floor and how he did all these things, which is no big deal. He just wrote a book about it, and that made it a big deal. But think about it. Who are you doing it for? You're doing it for Christ. The Christ in you. You're doing it for God, the God in you. Could you conceive of God, as you understand God, ever doing a sloppy job? Huh? Could you ever conceive of God, however you conceive of Him, of it, doing a sloppy job in their work? Now, the Bible tells us it took God 7 days to do His thing. You know, okay. Actually, it was 6 days. So, in 6 days, He took nothing and brought forth everything. Don't you think in another 6 days, we too could bring forth anything we want? You see, you might work with your rake and your shovel and your tractor to make these things all good. But along with that, or even beyond that, see it done the way you want it done. And who knows? Your little mental elfkins might come out in the middle of the night and make everything in order. You know? Or your divine realization of whatever it is that you're working with creates it instantly, just the way you want it. Could that happen? You bet it could. Does it happen? All the time. You don't know it, and you laugh about it, but you don't know it because you're not paying attention to it. What you're paying attention to is the end result. Or you're paying attention to the before the fact where it's not done. Wherever our heart and mind are, there is our experience. If your heart is on the to-do job, then there'll always be the to-dos. If your heart and mind are on, it is complete now, it is finished, then it's done. Then we don't have the work to do. We say, well, don't get any exercise. And that's not the point. You get lots of exercise. You get lots of fun. And you get a lot of fun by doing the things you want to do. There are lots of things that you could do. Remember Ilsa? We had her go under the giant tree out here, which is more than 400 years old. And we would have her rake the leaves out from under the tree and straighten things up. And I told her, rake the leaves out and take them away in a basket, throw them in the creek or something, whatever you want to do. And she didn't do that. So then the next day, I'd say, go out and rake it. And when you're finished, take the leaves and throw them away. She didn't do it. And this went on for several weeks. And she never got the message. She never got the message to listen to everything that I told her to do and do it. Well, her, what's so important about taking the leaves out and putting them in the creek? Nothing. Except when you wash your dishes and you take soap and water and you wash the dishes, then you rinse them and then you dry them. If you do not wash them, if you do not rinse them, if you do not dry them, you have not taken care of the dishes. You say, well, I let the dishes air dry. Well, if that is your choice, the choice of an idiot, then that's okay. But the thing is, you wash the dishes, you rinse the dishes, and then you polish them and you dry them nicely. I have one glass in my cupboard that I noticed yesterday I was drinking out of, and it had a little mineral deposit around the top. And I thought to myself, why is that mineral deposit around the top of this very lovely glass? I have about four of them, and they're very nice glasses. And then I thought, yes, I have some people that love me very much, and they're always coming down and taking a glass out of my cupboard and sticking a plant in it, that is, you know, in the water. And then the water evaporates and leaves that mineral deposit around the glass. And so I took scouring powder this morning, and I scoured, it's just a quarter of an inch down from the top of the rim. And I scoured and scoured and scoured, and then it looked good. Then I rinsed it, and it was still there. Then I scoured again, and then I rinsed it, and it was still there. And I scoured again, and I rinsed it, and it was still there. I felt, this is not right. I like the glasses because I have a set of four of them, but I should take that glass and throw it in the trash because that glass is imperfect by our cause. You see, this is what happens when we do not follow the program. We have vases to put things in, like a cutting and water, and the vase has mineral deposits at the top and no big deal. It's just part of the way it is. But we take care of these things. And if you'll notice a beautiful vase that you put roses in, for instance, and the water goes down, for some reason, there's never a mineral deposit around the top of that vase. Have you ever noticed that? You can wash that glass, you can wash that vase, and there's never a mineral deposit because it is being used for what its purpose is to be used. A glass from the cupboard for drinking is not meant for that. And so the mineral deposit somehow stays there saying, ha, 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 ha. You're not doing this right. You're not doing it correctly. So you're getting the results of not doing it correctly. And you feel guilty within yourself. You feel within yourself that you're doing something incorrect when you take things and use them out of sync, when you use them out of the program for which they're planned. You know that. You know that. When you put on a beautiful new white shirt that looks lovely, or a blouse, and then you go out and dig in the garden, and you get dirt all over it, and you say, oh, what difference does it make? I'll throw it in the laundry and it'll come clean. But it doesn't. The grass stains are on it and other things, they don't want to come out. And then you have to use bleach and other things to get it out. And that's a little too strong for that very lovely blouse or shirt that you had. You see, when you use things out of context, you make a problem that sometimes has no remedy except just to throw the problem thing away. This is how it happens when you're working on treatments. You work on these treatments, and you don't work on them the way they're supposed to be worked on. You work on them first person present tense positive, first person present tense positive, first person present tense positive. I could go on and on and on and say that. But in our first course of the Art and Science of Wholeness, I teach you first person present tense. Oh, that's so hard. It's so hard to write in the first person present tense positive. It's so hard because you can't say anything. So it is. But how about that? You see, it's very hard, darn it, to learn how to ride a bike. It keeps falling over. It doesn't stand up by itself. You got to have your daddy hold it so you can keep it up. And then you got to get going real fast. And then when you slow down, then you fall over so you can get off, you know, or so you can stop because you can't press the pedals down to step on the brakes or take the handle brakes. Oh, God, that's tough. Yeah. And then once you learn to ride a bike, you think nothing of it. You think nothing of it. You think it just has been the easiest thing in the world. You don't remember all the tasks and tests you had while you were learning to ride it. Well, my friends, this is the same thing. First person present tense positive. This is the same thing working with principle, working with the law of cause and effect, working with treatment, working with healing, working with wholeness. You see, this is not, well, if I were to have you sit in the lotus position and sit with your back straight up for hours, you'd say, oh, I'm really doing something great. I'm really working on my spiritual life. But you aren't. You are merely learning self-discipline, which is not in itself a bad thing at all. But you're just learning self-discipline. It does not make you more spiritual. It merely teaches you to be more one-pointed, more disciplined, and those things are good too. But learning how to think in the first person present tense positive is a very immediate, efficient, effective way to speak your word and have wonderful things happen in your life. It's just up to you, totally. I prove it works. You talk to Stefan about some of the treatment work that he's done, and zing, 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 zing. You talk to Gertrude about some of the treatment work she's done. Some worked, some didn't. You see, whenever Gertrude got her bloated nothingness in the way of the divine circuits, it didn't work. And you know what the bloated nothingness is? Caring. Being so caring about the other person. You're dying? Oh, that's such a shame. You know, you're such a lovely person. I enjoy your company so on. Why are you dying? You know, you don't really say that, but that's what you're thinking. And as long as you're thinking those things, you're in trouble. If a person says they're dying, say, is that what you want to do? Well, the doctor says, is that what you want to do? But is that what you want to do? No! Then I will work with you and see you living a long, happy, harmonious, beautiful life. And it's done. But you see, you have to figure out what the person really wants. It's not a matter of what they want that makes the difference. But you are in trouble because you emotionally, humanly care. And if you're a real practitioner, you don't care. You don't care. You just speak your word and say, you're whole and perfect, whether you like it or not. You don't have that, whether you like it or not. But you're whole and perfect because that's your nature. That's your reality. You live eternally because that's your reality. And you see, this is what we're teaching you to become professional. You take your car into the garage and you say, it doesn't work right. Well, what seems to be the problem? Blah, 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 blah. You tell him all the little symptoms. And he says, okay. And he's a professional. He doesn't believe you. He takes the car, takes the first spin, checks it out, brings it back, and he says, I know exactly what it is. And he puts his diagnostic tester on to double check that he does know exactly what it is. And then he fixes the car and does a good job. And it's done. He doesn't doubt that he can fix that car. He knows he has the ability within him to use the law, the principle, the techniques to fix that car. He knows he has the devices to check on whether he's doing the right thing, diagnostic testers and stuff like that. And he does his job. Now, are you professional enough in being a divine being to bring about the divine being in your world? Or are you professional enough being a human being to bring about the human attitudes of the world in their perfect way? And that's good too. That's good too. The majority of the world like being humans. They want to have something to cry about. They like to go to sobby movies and stuff like that. They like that. Why do they like that? Because it's a human aspect. They thoroughly enjoy that. You say, well, why would anyone enjoy having a sobby story? You know? Well, why? They enjoy that, and that's what they do. Now, what about you? What do you enjoy? Do you like to go to horror movies? Because you like to get all shook up? You like to go to sporting movies? Where you see sporting games going on and things like that? Is that what you like to do? Do you like to go to romance? Murder mysteries? You like to go to comedies? You like to go to musicals? What sort of things do you like? Well, wherever it is that you like these things, why do you like them? Do you like them because they make you feel happy or comfortable? Or do you like them because you feel superior to them? Because they're having all those troubles. And you figured out long before the movie got over how it should end. And sometimes it does end that way. But you see, you know the rule. You know the rule. You're either going to be divine or you're going to be human. You're either going to be a professional car repairman or you're going to be a tinkerer. I don't claim to be a professional car man. I just reach into the engine and touch the right wires sometimes. And everything works. Or I have other people reach in and touch the right wire. I speak my word. All is in divine order. And it goes. And there's no problem. How do you do it? What do you write down in your blessing book? What sort of things do you believe about yourself in your blessing book? Do you believe that you have work to do? If you have work to do, go for it. Enjoy. Rake the road. Make the berms. Make all these things beautiful. Go ahead. Go for it. Or do you see it done? Well, Herb, it's a little bit iffy if you say you see it done. No, really. Not really. Anita thinks, oh, I will straighten out the road. And then she's talking to John at lunch. She says, I'm going to straighten out that road tomorrow morning, and I'm going to make it all look beautiful like Herb said. And so John says, that's nice. And then in the middle of the afternoon, John finishes his things before he planned, and then he goes over and gets the tractor. And with his expertise and his imaginativeness, he goes over there and he sculpts the edge of the road into the berms. And he makes it all beautiful. And he takes a rake with one sweep. He pulls everything into place. Anita would take two or three sweeps. But with one sweep, he just pulls it right into place. And then he comes in for supper. And he says, boy, I feel good. And everyone says, well, John, why do you feel so good? Oh, I just had fun. I had an idea and I went out and carried it out because it was really easy. I just thought it'd be fun. And then the next day, Anita goes out to do the road and she looks at it and says, "My God, that's just the way I was going to do it. Thank you, God." You know, outside. No, thank you, God, in here. You know, and she comes in for lunch and she says, "You know, I wanted that road to be done right, and I went out there and it was done right. I am a great practitioner." And John says, "Yes, you are." And he doesn't say, "I did it." He doesn't need the credit. Having you think that you're a wonderful practitioner, which you are, and he was the tool which carried it out, which it doesn't matter. He feels good, you feel good, everybody feels good, and that's the way it should be. The world goes around, sometimes with a little help, but most of the time by itself. Most of the time, there is nothing pushing the world to make it in perpetual motion. It just works that way. Can you stop and think? I set an empty bowl on the sink counter here, and I had just set it down, and the bowl sort of was wiggling a little bit, and it wiggled in a circle. And I thought to myself, "Oh, I wonder how long you're going to do that." So I watched it, and it wiggled. It wiggled for a full 5 minutes or more. And I thought, "Now, why is it wiggling?" You know, it had no reason. It doesn't normally wiggle, but it wiggled. And I thought, "That is interesting. Now, why did it wiggle? We may never know. What caused it to stop? I didn't notice. I left it and it was still wiggling. Did somebody else come along and stop it? Perhaps. Did the dog or cat jump up there and say, 'What is this nonsense?' But you see, why did it wiggle? And I'm serious. I'm very serious. It was wiggling away there, and I thought, "Yeah, that's interesting." I have lots of little interesting things happening in my life, and you do too. But most of the time, you don't give it a second thought. You see something wiggle, and you just go about your work, not paying any attention to it, not stopping to enjoy the mystery of it, the magic of it, the miracle of it. But you have miracles going on around you all the time, and they're happening around you all the time, and you just don't really know about them because you think that they're not really true. So start realizing that they are really true, and they are really wonderful, and they are something that you are doing, and you're putting the cause in motion. We want to train ourselves, so we are so diligent in maintaining our thoughts, in the maintenance of our thoughts, that they are always the direction we want to go. Now, I said before, the other person has no right to say he wants to die, as far as the practitioner is concerned. The practitioner does not concern themselves one little bit with what the, so to speak, patient, client, or friend wants. The practitioner only looks at the truth and draws that forth. Now, people may want to die because their life is not happy. They may want to die because their body is sick. They may want to die because they think that in heaven things will be easier. You know, it all depends on whatever reason they want to die. But they're not going to make it. They're not going to die because there's no capacity within any of us to die. Our capacity is only to live. So let's take our attitudes and have our attitudes be perfect attitudes in which we live, in which we move and have our being. Let them be perfect attitudes. there is no thought of death. It is, as we think, the cessation of the life principle. There is no thought of that. There's only thought of everything being done right now, everything being done in the now, right here, exactly the way we think about it. Now, why aren't you somewhere else? Why are you here? You chose to be here. What are you going to get out of being here? Only one thing, having fun. If you're here and you're not having fun, you're doing the wrong thing or you're in the wrong place. Well, you're not in the wrong place, so it must be that you're doing the wrong thing. Now, what is the wrong thing that you're doing? The wrong thing that you're doing is thinking that you're not having fun. Well, now that seems easy to remedy. You just think, I'm having fun. And that's exactly how it works. You think, I'm having fun. You say to your friends when you go to the circus or something, are you having fun? And they say, oh, no, I'm kind of bored. Well, let's go over and talk to the clown. Let's go over and watch the dancing bears. Let's go do this, let's go do that. And pretty soon, you get involved in the circus and you're having fun. But when you stand on the outside of any activity and look within and don't participate 100%, you're having fun not participating, being sort of belligerent, but you don't think of it that way. Have fun participating in the game that you choose to be in. If you go to the circus, have fun in the circus. If you go to the seashore, have fun at the seashore. If you go to your office, have fun at your office. If you go to your manual labor job, have fun with your manual labor. I worked for my father all through high school and college as a manual laborer. He would never let any of us kids get into the higher level stuff of bricklaying and all that other sort of stuff, even though we knew how to do it. And we could have been very bored, but I was rich. I was so rich, richer than any other kid in school. I had $50 a week coming to me. $50 a week! Man, oh man, I had money and I didn't have anything to spend it on. I lived at home, food, housing, everything, clothing, and mother was kind of generous. She says, just $10 a month. Wouldn't it be wonderful to live on $10 a month? But so I had how much money?
$190.
I'm sorry? Say again?
$190.
$190. Every month, $190 in my checking account. Actually, it was a savings account. But $190, that's a lot of money. That's a lot of money for a kid yet. And I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I thoroughly enjoyed playing it to the hilt, telling my friends what I was earning and what I was doing, you know. And they thought, yeah, you know. My dad doesn't have a business, so I can go to work for him, you know. And I got away worth working for him, even when I was younger than I should have been. But that was okay. It was all my choice, and I really enjoyed it. But here's the part of the story that I'm telling you. I loved going to work. I loved all the things I had to do. I loved mixing mud. You know what mixing mud is? This is the mortar that goes between the bricks and the block when you're laying up a building. It's that cement that goes between them. And I know how that works and what it's supposed to do. We have laid thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of feet of concrete block and brick and so forth. And anyhow, I loved it. And I would carry the mud up to the masons, wherever level they were, laying the brick walls and the concrete walls, concrete block. And I'd carry it in a hod carrier, a sort of a V thing with a plug on the end, you know. And then you get up there and you lean over and it pours out onto the board that they're working on. But they were very demanding. I was the boss's son and they weren't going to let me get away with anything. And so they said, now, you realize when you bring that mud up here, you have to take it from the edge of the board and bring it into the center. You can't leave it laying around the edge of the board where it's going to fall off and, you know, be useless. And if there's any mud on the board, you have to mix it up with that fresh mud that you brought up. So it's all going to be, you know, at the same consistency. So I did that. But I did that with such perfection. I would take it like this and scrape off my spatula, bring it here, and then make a nice little mound, almost like a pyramid. And then the guys would dig in there. I said, "You're messing up my job here." You know? And they would laugh, and be, you know, because it was fun. I was having fun. And I had so much mortar up to them that the board sometimes didn't hold it. And they said, "You're too fast. You're too fast." And I said, "Well, running up and down these stairs, I'm building up my legs for when I go on track on Saturdays, you know, and I do this and I do that." "Yeah, but you're too fast. Just calm down then." And then we'd have to throw a brick up to them, and we'd have to take an old piece of lath in our hand and whoosh, whoosh, whoosh. Well, now, why not just carry them up? Well, carrying brick up a ladder is not any fun. And you're up with this leg and up with this leg and up with this and up with this. Well, just to take this and then somebody up above catch it and then keep them up. It was great. Concrete block, you couldn't do that. But I had fun. I am trying to tell you, it was damned hard. It was work. It was work that built your muscle. And I was a skinny kid, and I stayed a skinny kid. All of that manual labor didn't build up great big muscles in me because it just wasn't what I was. But I was strong. And I always have been, always will be strong. I was strong. And I enjoyed it so thoroughly. And my enjoyment made the men who were the bricklayers and who were the whatever they were, you know, working up there. Benny was my boss, and Benny was the head of the laborers, and he was telling us all what to do. And of course, he was nothing more than a laborer himself, but he was a good guy. And I just enjoyed working with him, and I enjoyed fulfilling his request. Benny would say to me, "Bring me a gallon of water, please. I'm thirsty." And so I would scurry down the ladder, fill up a gallon of water, nice and cold from the spigot, bring it up to him, and he would take it like this here, and slug it all the way in one swallow. And I just loved seeing him do that. And I'd rush down and get another one. "You want another one? You want another one?" And he knew. He said, "Yeah, you can bring it here and leave it here." But he would just chug a lug it. And it was such fun. The job and the men that I worked with were such a joy because I was having so much fun there myself, enjoying. I couldn't wait to get to work in the morning. I'd wake up early and take my bike and ride it out 6 or 8, 10 miles to wherever it was the job was. And I would have everything all ready, all the boards cleaned off. And my dad would say to him, "All right, you know we start at 7 o'clock. It's just because you get out there at 5 o'clock and you've worked 2 hours before we get there. You're not getting paid for that." He just wanted to put me to a test. I didn't care. I loved it. I wanted to have a clean operation. I wanted everybody's place to be in order. I wanted all the scaffoldings up at the right height so the guys could do their work. I had fun. I lived in the now. I always live in the now. I enjoyed every moment of everything I did. And whenever any of the guys would have a problem, they wouldn't ask me questions about it because I was just some dumb little teenage kid, you know. But they would talk to me about it because they knew after they got done talking to me, they felt better. Because I was studying unity and I was studying positive thinking and I was studying positive living. And they knew. They knew. They didn't want to say that I knew something they didn't know. But just in talking to me, it was good. We had good talks. And only because I lived in the now and enjoyed it. And of course, you can do that too. You prove it works by seeing it done in the little things. Now, my recitation about my job and working with my dad, you've heard it perhaps once before, but it's living in the now. The job was fun. I would go back to school and I'd be talking about it all day long in school with all my buddies. And they'd say, gee, that sounds like fun. You know, could we get a job there? Could we do that too? It wouldn't be fun for them. It wouldn't be fun for them because they would not go there with the same attitude I did. You see, I was the boss's son and I could do no right. And I mean just that. I could do no right because they were looking at me to find fault in me in every little thing because I was the boss's son and they wanted to put me down. And I didn't care. I just loved them all and I did nice things for them. I'd bring their lunches to them. What I'm trying to say is, I had fun. Now, another boss's son might say, I'm sick of this. You know, I'm going to go to work someplace where I'm not known, you know, and I'm taken for just who I am. But life is not going to take you for just who you are. You have to take yourself for just who you are. You have to be the wonderful, beautiful, fantastic person that you are. And when you are, then it's great. When Gertrude walked into her classroom, she didn't walk in there with the expectation that the kids are going to be rowdy and obstreperous, like that word, huh? They're going to be orderly, friendly, joyous, thoroughly enjoyed. That's a class that they chose to be in, right? And they chose to be in it, and they chose to have fun in it. And Gertrude said, I don't do anything in life unless I have fun. And so at all her teaching years, she had fun doing what she did. She couldn't wait to go to school. She couldn't wait to be with her students. And when she retired, she was very happy. Now she created a new world for herself. And her new world keeps her just as busy as the old world did. And part of the new world, you know what it is? Walking her dog. She finds her dog must get out and have a walk. Now, there are other people who think their dogs do not have to have a walk. They have them in the house, and they have a little gate going out on the porch for them to do their duty, and the dogs don't have to go for a walk. And so they and their dogs sit in the living room watching TV. But Gertrude, her creation is her dog has to have a walk. That's just an excuse. She needs to have a walk, and so she lets the dog take her out as an excuse. And that's really the way it is. And she has a ball, and the dog has a ball. And the dog is obedient and courteous and kind and loving, just like she is, because she is creating it that way. Now, what about the rest of you? How often do you go down and take a canoe out in the lake and scuttle around? Do you have to take the canoe out? Or the canoe get lonely if you don't take it out? You know? You take it out because it's fun. And the breeze is pretty strong, and trying to paddle against that breeze is not easy. But you do it because it's fun. You do everything that you do because it's fun and being yourself. You're putting the cause in motion to accomplish any goal you want. And if you want the goal of healing, wholeness, abundance, right action, truth, whatever, you put that in motion. Now, back to the man on the job again. If any day I didn't feel good, if I would come there with a somber expression on my face or feeling sorry for myself because I was at a cold or something, they would not give me any ease. They'd say, the way to get rid of a cold is work harder. Now come on, work harder. The way to do this is do that. Yeah, you know, and if you have the unhappiness in your heart because your girlfriend wouldn't say happy day to you, then you just work harder. You know, you work harder. And oh, they had no pity on me. They were wonderful. They were really, I was kept so busy, I didn't have a chance to think about what I was unhappy about. I didn't have a chance to think about a cold or anything else. And you see, we can do that for ourselves. We don't need to have our friends help us do that. We can do that for ourselves. Now, when you do it for yourself, miracles happen. You take charge of your life in the now, in the here and now. It wasn't very often that I went to work with an unhappy attitude because I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I wasn't working that long, just during the summer season and on weekends and holidays. But life was wonderful. I created it that way. And I created every single experience I had, and I loved it. Well, Herb, you're special. You're damn right I'm special. I like the saying that Sai Baba has to his friends. They say, but you're God. And he says, yes, and so are you. But you don't know it. I know it. Now, that's the only difference. You don't know it, but I know it. Now, you start knowing it. Start knowing that you're God. Start knowing that you're wonderful. Start knowing that you're the magnificence of the universe. And such is what you are. Just start knowing it. Start living it. Start demonstrating it. I see it work in the wonders of the creation of me. I've explained that to you thoroughly. I see it work in the complex yet simple creation that goes on around me. The complex thoughts of having a cold or feeling unhappy, and then putting a new cause in motion, of feeling good, of feeling right, of feeling all is in divine order. It's just a matter of our choice. How do you think about yourself? If you ever, and you'll excuse me for saying this with all the lack of compassion I have within me, if you ever feel sorry for yourself, that you have not accomplished something that was important for you to accomplish, don't be stupid enough to tell somebody else about it. Never. If you ever have a desire in your heart that you have not fulfilled, don't go telling anybody else about it. Go around telling everybody that it is fulfilled now. It is done now. And they'll look at you and say, yeah, it doesn't seem like it's done now. But you maybe don't go around telling people, but you tell yourself. You tell yourself it's done now. And then you will be surprised. Whatever it takes to make it happen, whatever it takes, it will be done. It will be done. And the world will not remember that you didn't have what you have. And that's a wonderful thing. I prove it works by every thought I think and manifest. I prove it works, the principle, by every thought I think, and as it manifests, I prove it works. You are all here, traveling from the corners of the earth. And how did you get here? How did you arrive at these points? What blessings? John and Anita, they like to say, well, we looked on the internet and we found a flight from there to London for a dollar, you know. Big deal. Big deal. You should be doing this all the time. This should be, you know, just normal for you. But don't be so surprised that when you put the law in motion, the cause in motion, you get a result. This is wonderful. But this is the tough thing. When you speak your word and it works, don't be surprised and jump up and down and say, it works, it works, it works. Just keep doing it. Keep doing it. It should be so ordinary and so common for you that you just do it and you enjoy it. Wouldn't it be nice to have every thought that you think manifest instantly? Wouldn't it be nice to have every dream you've ever had brought forth right now in your life? Wouldn't that be nice? And the answer is no. Why is the answer no? Because you don't realize. If I could take a recorder and record every thought that goes on in your mind and then categorize them in positive and negative thoughts, you would find that there are very few leftover positive thoughts that haven't been negated by the negative thoughts. Very few. And those very few are the ones that you think so highly about. Now, I would like you to train yourself so that you not only have very few thoughts that are positive, and you have no thoughts that are negative. So therefore, everything that you think about would be manifest. But that's what it is. That's what it is. We're at the end of our time now. So we'll come back in a few minutes and we will talk about there are no secrets. And that is in keeping with what we have just been saying. I love you, and we will see you in a moment.